Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to the Owl's Nest, bringing you the bird's eye view of the Overwatch League and all the action. Of course, last weekend wrapped up the May Melee Tournament, and now we're going into a little bit of a break. Everyone finally gets some time to relax and enjoy themselves. But of course, before we get to that, we want to look back and talk about all of the action, what led up to the winners taking each of their respective regions. And we're going to do that, of course, starting with the Asian region, then talking about the North American region next. And at the end of the show, we actually have a little bit of a surprise for you, a little bit of a funner segment, something a little bit different than what we normally do on this show. I have myself created an obscure lore quiz about Overwatch, and we're going to test Jake's knowledge and see just how much he knows beyond the raw mechanics of the game. Are you excited, Jake?
Honestly, I feel pretty confident. Like,
really?
I don't know. I wonder if there's anything I don't know.
Okay, all right.
I watch a lot of, I watch all the videos and stuff. I don't know if is there any source material for the lore. I know they just released like a book, but I assume that's not in it yet. I didn't read that, but I've seen like everything they've made for Overwatch, at least the video and animation side. So I've read a lot of stuff like in the game. So
well, I'm looking forward to it. All right, so we're gonna go ahead and start off talking about the Asian region, though. Of course, Shanghai going on to take the crown. Wasn't a whole lot of surprises, I think, in Shanghai being the victors at the end, but there were a whole lot of surprises on their road to victory. So the first thing that I wanted to start with is talking about their first match going up against the London Spitfire. I think that out of all the matches that they had, this was not the one that I expected to be as close as it was, especially compared to Nixle, which we'll get to in a minute. So, Jake, what was it that you saw in this match that, I mean, was there anything surprising about the Spitfire being able to take the Dragons to the Game 5?
I definitely was really impressed by the Spitfire, their ability to go toe-to-toe with the Dragons and even match them on some comps. You know, I thought Spitfire was a team that would probably be hurt by the switching to a lack of hero pools, because I thought that they were having most success on a brawl-based composition. But they totally proved me wrong. Like, they proved that I had underestimated them, because to go 3-2 with the Dragons, you have to be able to pull out different comps. You have to be able to surprise them, and they did that. I mean, there wasn't quite enough to take the series. The Dragons had the fortitude, but I think you're exactly right. Like, I didn't expect this to be close. I thought this would be a stomp, and it just sort of goes to show continuously how incredibly closely matched the entire APAC region is. Like, in NA, I think there is a bit of a spectrum of diversity and skill. You know, there are also more teams, but even within, like, if you don't think about how many teams there are, even just for the teams that exist, they're incredibly closely matched. Like, the Spitfire can take the Dragons. You know, we saw, obviously, incredibly close match with the Dynasty. Like, this region is really awesome Overwatch, because everyone is good. Like, there's nobody who's going to roll over for an easy win.
So, taking a look back at the weeks leading up to the May Melee, looking at the placements or the match that led to the placements, the London Spitfire had only taken a single map off of the Guangzhou Charge. They got 3-0 in the other three matches that they were in. So, what do you think was the deciding factor in them being able to rise up to the challenge against Shanghai? You know, are they better with no hero pools, or do you think that, you know, this switch to a tournament format, you know, putting a little bit more on the line, you know, they were just able to summon something up that they had, you know, within the depths of them?
Yeah, I mean, these are all like relatively newer players to the Overwatch League, right? Coming in to play for the Spitfire and in their new lineup. So, in my mind, maybe that tournament format is great for them. On top of that, I think it's where they've experienced, where they grew up as players. You know, playing in tournament formats, right? Like, that is the format in not Contenders Korea, but still, like, even in Contenders Korea, there are those like bigger tournaments. You know, it's like a little bit of a different structure. And if we go way back before that, right, it's like all these tournament formats. Where these players are building their skills. So maybe that factor of like adding the pressure, you know, win or go home. And for a team that had obviously a weak qualifying run, to be able to, you know, just have the mental fortitude, I'm just super impressed with the Spitfire. And although they do drop, right, like dropping to the eventual champions in the first round, it's not such a bad feeling. So they have something to build on, I think, going forward.
So in that first round, of course, we also saw the Seoul Dynasty sweep the Hangzhou Spark 3-0 and the New York Excelsior just barely make it past Chengdu in a Game 5 3-2. So what were your big takeaways from some of those matches? You know, besides obviously the final results, was there anything that was really surprising to you?
I was pretty surprised Spark went down easy, to be honest. I thought Spark was a team that could be pretty competitive. And then for New York, I also think maybe also underperforming to fans' expectations. But it's like I feel bad for these teams because I think you put these teams in an A and I think they'd be a very different story. Any of those teams in the lower side, like I still think they would be at least mid-tier in NA. So for New York, like it's got to be painful, I think, to go and then, you know, to A, have a really close series against the Chengdu Hunters. Well, I mean, you can write that off a little bit because Chengdu is a very unique team and they're quite a strong team right now. Like they've shown that they're not just limited to one or two comps. They have great versatility as well, I think, playing like the Orisa comps, playing the Hammond comps, like they really look good on them all. Even Winston Among looked really nice, and even Orion, right? Among used to be thought of as a limited player, but I think that's just because the team wanted to play this Hammond strategy and didn't want to play Goats, and Among was, you know, if they're going to do that, then he's playing Hammond 24-7, but now he's getting to show, I think, that he has the skill across the main tank role. He's not a limited player, and he can, you know, put out for his team. For New York, like, I mean, I think they probably wanted to win that match a little more convincingly, and it kind of showed in their next match.
Yeah, so when they went up against the Shanghai Dragons, of course, there was not a whole lot of a contest here. The Shanghai Dragons clean sweeping them. Now, I don't want to use the C word that we normally associate with the New York Excelsior, but what happened here?
This has to be, I mean, the one thing to understand about the 3-0 is, you know, in a traditional format in the Overwatch League, the 3-0, it doesn't have to be that meaningful, right? Like, if you just roll three, like, you get three map picks, like, RNG that are good for you, then you get 3-0 the other team, and it's like, great, like, this is an awesome series for us. We played super well. We were really good on all these map picks. But if you 3-0 in the tournament format, the loser map pick format, that means Dragons win the first map. Sure, you can chalk that up to it's a good map for them. They're good at it. But then they win against New York on two of their map picks consecutively. That is really bad. Like, that is, like, this is a way, in order to get a 3-0 in the playoffs, you have to be even more of a lead on a team. You have to be way better than the other team in order to get a 3-0 on them, because you're beating them on their best map picks, right? Like, two times in a row. So New York definitely going to be hurting, licking their wounds after this one, because that's a beating right there. Like, even just getting one map win, you know, that it's like, to get zero map wins, you're really getting worked, you know. It means you lost two of your own map picks, and that's painful. Like, there's no putting a bow on that and making it pretty. Like, it's really bad. And for New York, you know, I don't know if you can't say, like, what's happening internally for them. You know, maybe this meta isn't the best for them. I think there wasn't so much Ryan played this meta, and I do think that's where New York is their strongest. You know, playing mostly Orisa. I mean, Mono is so good at Winston, though, so you'd think the Winston would also be a strength for this team, but just not really materializing.
Yep, then we saw the Seoul Dynasty have another close match against the Guangzhou Charge, going 3-2 as well. Any big takeaways from that? I mean, obviously, you know, the Seoul Dynasty showing a great performance over the Spark, but you know, having a real close one with the Charge here to be able to make their way into the finals.
No surprises there. I mean, my only surprise would be that Dynasty came out on top of that series, because I really think the Charge is an insanely good team. I think they are one of the best in the APAC region. I would honestly call it maybe a little bit of an underperformance for them. Like, I would have loved to see that team in the grand finals. That's where I thought this tournament was going to go. I thought it was going to be Dragon's Charge, but we didn't get that. We got Dragon's Dynasty. Obviously, it didn't disappoint, so I can't possibly complain. But and a truly epic final at that. But yeah, for the Charge, I think this is a team where, like, kid gloves are off. Like, I'm expecting them to be in the very top. Like, no longer are they, oh, they're a new team, you know, they're adapting. Like, no, these players are really good. They have great synergy together. Players like Krong on the Sigma is just disgusting. He's a monster on that hero. Their DPS lineup is insane. Support's insane. Like, just really, really good team. So, pretty impressed with the Dynasty that, like, has had ups and downs. Like, everyone can say, like, they've had big ups, big downs. Like, times they look great, times they look terrible. But this was a great look for the Dynasty, that they're able to come out on top of the Charge. I don't think you can write this off as the Charge playing poorly. I think you have to look at this as Dynasty really, you know, coming into form and being really confident with themselves.
Yeah. Speaking of coming into form, of course, you mentioned they did, of course, make it to the championship with the Shanghai Dragons. Even got up 3-0 to match point before the Dragons ran it back for the full four-map reverse sweep. So Jake, talk to me here. I mean, the Seoul Dynasty, like you said, they've had some ups and downs, but they've had more, you know, they've been swept more times in the past few weeks than I think anyone would care to admit, and suddenly they come out swinging and really match the Dragons almost pound for pound. What happened differently, and not just in this match, you know, against the Charge as well, but what is the Dynasty doing differently now that leads to the success from this weekend?
I mean, I honestly think, like, they're proving Wolf wrong, where Wolf tweeted about, like, you can't do well without a good Echo, and they basically didn't play Echo.
I mean,
maybe a tiny bit, but I don't know if they pulled it out at all. I don't really remember it coming out in the series. They definitely don't want to play the hero, and but they showed that you really don't have to. Like, you can succeed. Like, they played strats without it, and I don't think that the fact that the Dragons played some Echo is the reason the Dragons won the series. I think Dynasty, you know, they looked pretty good, right? Like, but the Dynasty is a team where I can definitely imagine them being better in a tournament format, in the pressure format, because these are a lot of very experienced players who've played in the Overwatch League for seasons and seasons, and, like, they're players who I can totally see doing better under pressure, who I can totally see rising to the occasion rather than really being desperate to show out in, like, a random Overwatch League match. They, like, are players who want that big tournament stage. They want that, you know, bright lights, big moment, and that's when I think they're going to be there at their best. So for the Seoul Dynasty fans, this is great news. Like, for come playoffs, is like, you can feel confident that this team's going to come up big in playoffs, at least have a strong performance, regardless of how they do overall, like, at least show out the way they did here, which, you know, this is really crazy, right? Because so go up 3-0 for the Dynasty, really unlikely, because it's Lizard map pick, so Dragons, they're beating Dragons on two consecutive map picks. But then even more unlikely is the Dragons win game 4, sure, that's their map pick, but then they win 3 consecutive enemy map picks, so it's just as unlikely, right? Like, so it's completely crazy, like, that the series went this way. Like, it's so hard to go up 3-0 in a loser map pick format, and it's even harder to come back to the 4-3 constantly into the enemy map picks. But the Dragons' mental fortitude, their coaching, like, you've got to credit them on that, because just to believe that it's possible in map 4 and to play as well as they did in map 4, like, I think map 4, the turning point is always, like, if you go back and are going to rewatch something, I would rewatch that turning point game, because that is where a player really impresses me and you know, makes me believe in them long term, is that they can come out 100% effort, like, playing their best Overwatch, down 3-0 in the grand finals. Like, it's so easy to be down 3-0 in the grand finals and lose your mental and that's what we've seen in the Overwatch League grand finals. A lot of teams kind of crumble, like, when they're falling behind, they just crumble and the other team just rolls over them. Like, I would say not exactly, but I think that kind of happened with Vancouver last season. Like, I don't think they were playing very well in the grand finals. I think Shock was playing well, and then it just, like, momentum built and built, and it just got worse and worse and worse. That's how it normally goes. That's, like, the normal human reaction to being destroyed, is you're like, oh my god, I'm being destroyed, this sucks, you know. So for the Dragons, it's just, like, hats off to them. This is something that few players have the capacity to do, and the fact that you have 6 of them or more on the same roster, you know, hats off, mad respect to the Dragons. They obviously earned this, so what an epic finals. You literally can't ask for better than that.
Well, that wraps up everything that happened over in the Asian region there. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Shock's victory and some of the unlikely results that we saw in the North American region. Coming up next, stay tuned.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Down, And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Oh, we have an unprecedented outbreak.
Thousands of us walking the earth.
We might die at any moment.
Because we're under attack.
In which case, we must act fast.
Doctors are trying their best.
Working long hours and...
always sacrificing.
Their health.
To protect you.
Well, I'd very much like to thank them.
Thanks, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Wait a minute.
What's the prognosis?
It's still changing.
So we have a novel virus and no vaccine at this time.
What should we do?
We gotta get everybody else back into the houses. We gotta keep them there.
In other words,
this is our lockdown, right? What that means is...
stay in your homes. Make no attempt to reach loved ones.
And take a long nap.
You can count me out.
You can count me out, too.
Some people are immune to good advice.
You know what I mean?
Those idiots.
I just need to make sure you fully understand.
Let's recap.
I'm begging you.
Stay inside.
Wash your hands.
And make sure you've
got 10 feet of personal space around you.
Stay away from me. Stay away from me.
I didn't hear you wash your hands.
So think on this, lads.
When you're home watching TV.
Think about the
medical stuff.
Working for you. So I'm asking you.
Stay home.
In isolation.
To stop the virus.
All right, I'll do it.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
You stay classy, planet Earth.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning into the Owl's Nest. If you haven't already, make sure that you're following us wherever you can on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter. You can also find me at Robbie_LandisCP on Twitter and Jake at JakeOW on Twitter, but Jake_OW on Twitch. So we just got done talking about the Asian finals there and the Shanghai Dragons in spectacular fashion reverse sweeping the Seoul Dynasty. So now we're going to turn our attention over to the North American road to victory for the San Francisco Shock. Again, I think, you know, after looking at what the seeding was and the teams that we had, it's no surprise that the Shock did end up coming out on top, but it wasn't the easiest of wins for them. Of course, they started out going up against the Dallas Fuel, who got a very close, but ultimately, in the end, convincing win over the Houston Outlaws. But Jake, talk to me about this Shock versus Fuel 3-1 here. What did you see here, and was there any surprises that really jumped out at you?
Well, you know, after the performance that Decay had in the Fuel Outlaws game, I was not writing this one off, honestly. You know, I think this is like, if you asked me a week ago, this is about the result I would have expected. But if you asked me right after the Battle for Texas, I would have said, well, you never know. But Decay did play insanely well in this series, did have these monster moments. But the problem was that Anse was answering back every step of the way, and the team play from the Shock was just so strong. Like, I think if anything showed that, it was when Fuel make the full hold on Rialto, and then Shock make the fuller hold. It's just like, this is a team, Shock, they just do not give up, ever. Krusty, you have to give this guy so much credit, because the team, in my opinion, like, a lot of times I see teams play comps, and I'm like, I don't really know why you're doing this. Like, this comp doesn't really make sense to me. Or you know, I not that it's totally crazy, but mm-hmm. That's probably a bad way to put it, because that makes it sound like I think they're crazy. But mostly they're playing a strategy, and I think, sure. I just don't think that's the best strategy in this mm-hmm. situation. Mm-hmm. But Shock, I can never say that about them. I really, like, so often I see a strat, I'm like, oh, I love this strategy. Like, it's even better than the one I was thinking of or whatnot. So they're incredibly good at not only adapting to their opponents and countering them, but also just playing exceedingly good Overwatch in themselves, like, as a unit. You know, obviously they never give up. Like, they've got extreme mental fortitude, and it's not hard, I guess, for them to have extreme confidence in themselves, but it never wavers, right? Like, you would expect this team to be really confident, because they're just, you know, with, like, they're obviously being champions and trying to defend their title, it's kind of normal for them, and they have an insanely good roster, but it never wavers. Like, even when things go wrong, we get full help, whatever, let's run it back, and they do. So there's too many things to say good about the Shock. Fuel, they played impressively well in the series. Decay, you could, like, see in the player cam how incredibly frustrated he was, because he's having a great series. And there was that one fight on... what map was it? I think it was maybe Nepal. Maybe it was a little bit later in the series. But he got two opening picks, and they lost the fight, which is, like, as you shouldn't happen, frankly, for the Fuel. Like, if your Widow gets two openers, that should be the end of the fight. Like, it shouldn't really be a situation where the other team can come back. Like, if I was the Shock, I wouldn't have even committed to that fight, but they do, and they win. So, this is a team you just can't put out and you can't put out. You need to, in order to beat the Shock, you need to have every single player in a good matchup against them. Like, you cannot just, like, Decay has a great performance. It's just not possible to solo carry against the Shock. Like, I don't think there's a player alive who can do it. So, they're just too clean.
Yeah, so the Shock, of course, would go on to face the Los Angeles Valiant. But before we talk about that one, I actually wanted to go back and take a look at this Valiant and Eternal match that that went 3-2, of course, with the Valiant. They ended up taking it. What did you see here out of the Eternal? And, you know, just prior to this, of course, they were taken to a Game 5 by the Boston Uprising. Do you think that the Eternal, you know, were a little shaky this week?
Maybe. I mean, I actually think the Boston Uprising have been pretty resurgent lately, so I don't want to say that the Eternal going to Game 5 against them was, like, weakness, really. What I do think about the Eternal is that they looked at their best, clearly playing these May Rush comps, primarily. That is where they looked, like, most comfortable, most confident to me. I think with no Smite in, when they're playing Winston, they did not look good, frankly. Like, the overall gameplay, like, I don't know who to put it on, because that comp is ultra team-based. Like, I don't think you can just say no Smite isn't playing well, because I really don't think that's fair. When dive goes wrong, like, you don't know who's making mistakes, because the reality is probably, like, everyone is making small mistakes. Like, everyone is having a decent game themselves, but dive isn't about having a decent game yourself. Dive is about putting in, like, 50 damage on the right target at the right millisecond of the game. Like, you know, you could deal 500 damage to the wrong target at the wrong time, and it's absolutely useless. So the nature of dive means it's all about the team play, but that's where I think things are a little more awkward and a little weaker for the Eternal. So when they're playing aggressive comps, when they're playing grind comps, they do look way better. But I think for the first four maps in the series, that's pretty much how it went. Like, Valiant takes a map where KSP can go crazy on Widow. Okay, he's freak of nature, roger that. We go to the next map. Eternal picks a map that's, like, super close quarters. They can play a ton of Reinhardt, and Ben Best has great performances, and they win that. And it sort of went back and forth with that sort of pick gameplay, I think, in the series, where Eternal are winning with the Rein Brawl, Valiant are winning with, like, the poke and the dive. And the map pick seems to sort of decide it. But then map 5 is, I think, where that series really changed tempo, because the Valiant, like, fearlessly, in my opinion, come out with a Reinhardt comp, and Eternal were like, there's no chance Eternal are expecting this, right? Because Eternal have consistently won in that mirror match. So why would Valiant ever run out with a Reinhardt comp? Like, I would not have done that if I were the Valiant. But they have incredible confidence, and they just keep running it. And Eternal was on some, like, we're going to counterpick your dive strat comp. And then Eternal, like, comes to mid, and they get destroyed because that comp is completely useless against Rein. So Eternal was just as shocked as I was. Like, why? I can't believe they're playing Reinhardt after they just lost every map mirror matching that. Why would they ever do that on Koth? But they did, and they rolled mid, and then they just steamrolled those rounds because they won mid. So it was like Eternal were just, like, not ready for Valiant to be that confident and that fearless, that they would lose the Reinhardt mirror in the previous four maps, generally speaking, not entirely. Like, there were big moments from both teams. Dreamer had huge moments on Rein, but just in general, they were way better on other comps, and they just fearlessly don't pick it in the last map, and it totally works out for them. So, yeah, that way to win the series for the Valiant has got to be a huge confident boost. But if anything, I think the pairs Eternal were like losing mid on Koth is super impactful. When you lose mid, you're probably going to lose the round, like, maybe 70% of the time or more. So the mid fight is just super important on control. That's how it works. You generally have control of the match overall when you win mid. And Valiant just won mid with the Rein comps both times, and they rolled. So that was a pretty big shock to me, frankly, but they did it. So major, super impressed with the Valiant. Like, I've always been bullish on this team, but the fact that the way they won, extremely, extremely powerful for them to, like, build that confidence, and yeah.
So with that confidence going into the San Francisco Shock match in the semifinals, you know, they did end up getting a clean sweep by the Shock 3-0. What do you think happened here with the Valiant?
Here, well, I mean, I don't want to say the Valiant played poorly, but the Shock are just too good. Like, the Shock are just on another level to teams like the Eternal and the Valiant, at least right now. Yeah, like, it just felt like where Eternal was winning against Valiant with Rein comps, Shock did the same, but then where Valiant had their strengths, Shock just matched them pound for pound. Like, yes, KSP is crazy, but he's going up against Ons, who is absurd. So, like, you just can't, like, no matter, every time I point to a team, I'm like, wow, this player is so exciting and they can play around this player. The Shock, it's like, these six players are really exciting and they can play around all six of them. So it's just a tough match, man. Like, you can't fault the Valiant. And honestly, maybe they were a little bit fatigued after that knockdown drag out the series before. Yeah, tough series for them. Obviously, going down 3-0 in a loser map pick format, pretty rough. But that's a Shock for you, man. This is why I predicted this team to be champions two times around.
Well, before we move on to the finals, I do want to take a minute to talk about the road that the Florida Mayhem took to get there as well. Of course, they first went up 3-0 over the Atlanta Reign and then managed to do the same thing over the Philadelphia Fusion. You know, what did you see from the Florida Mayhem? And I mean, just how far that they've come. Obviously, you know, with roster changes throughout the seasons, but quite a different look from what I think people expect out of them, even now, given some of their previous success.
Yeah, you got to give this team like a most improved award in the league, like no question. The fact that they're coming to be that like top two spot, and the way they did it, right? The road to get there is they dominate Atlanta, who looked pretty strong, and then they dominate Philly, who a lot of people were saying is that like top one, top two, and A team. And they got completely worked by Mayhem. So, you know, for Mayhem, for Coach Kuki especially, like hats off, because huge respect to them for that run. Like, this is the number two team in NA now. Like, you can't question that, really, right? They just destroyed two of the main contenders for, like, being in that area of the ladder, you know? Like, they just destroyed them. So, Florida Mayhem, just monstrous team. Monstrous performance out of them. Like, BQB is a real superstar. I think Fate, Corian, and Gargoyle make a really nice triplet of tanks. These players are really sick. They're really clean on all the tanks. Like, they're not limited players. So they allow their team to play like whatever strategy is best, whatever strategy is most comfortable. And they have insane confidence when they play. Like, they just like don't care. Nano BQB, Nano Yaki. This team just looks so sick right now. And I think that combo of BQB Yaki is really good. Yeah, I just think this team is really confident, and it shows heavily in their gameplay. And like, I'm super impressed that they have this confidence, right? No one's surprised the Shock are confident. Like, that's not weird. But the Mayhem to be this confident and to be this dominant and to expect this much of themselves, for me, I have to credit Coach Kuki with that, because this is like a mindset change for this team. Like, you have to have some sort of huge mental flip to go from we're like a bottom team for the first two seasons of the Overwatch League, and now we need to completely turn it around and like be one of the best teams in the league. And how do you actually do that? How do you actually get out of the rut of we're a bottom team, we're a bottom team, we're a bottom team? It's not easy. It's like, it's way harder than people think. So, just super, super respecting the Mayhem right now. I can't wait to see what this team does come playoffs. And for the rest of the season, I think they're going to have that confidence now. I don't think it's going to be a question anymore. Like, they are a team to beat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, again, so looking at the final then, Shock versus the Mayhem. I mean, they went toe-to-toe, and despite the match score being 4-2, I mean, I think it was a lot closer the entire way through. It really wasn't until Hollywood that I feel like the Mayhem started to fall behind the Shock a little bit. So, you know, what did you see in this match between these two teams?
Personally, like, both teams like looked strong. Both teams were playing to their strengths and having good moments. I think probably what decided the series in my eyes is that Shock is like the best Orisa Sigma team in the league, you know, except maybe teams like the Dragons and APAC. But yeah, Shock's Orisa Sigma is deadly. It's terrifying. They are really, really good. Choi Hyobin, insane player on the Sigma, especially. Just goes a little bit crazy. Smurf on the Orisa, really, really nasty. So I think kind of that element of the series gets really hard, because you're going up against a team that is like every single player is ultra comfortable in their role. You know, and the Orisa Sigma is a comp that's like all about individual performance, actually. In contrast to Dive, where that's not so important, it's more about team coordination. The Orisa Sigma comp is like, well, at least the Orisa Sigma need to play well together, but Choi Hyobin and Smurf have that on lockdown. But then a lot of other players just need to perform individually. Like, if you're playing a core hit scan, that's usually going to be Ons, maybe Striker. They need to just have a great game, but those players are monsters, so of course they always do. Rascal on the Echo, like, is one of the best Echo players in the league, if not the best. Like, it's hard to compare a Shock player to a normal player, because Shock wins every game, so they look sick, you know? But yeah. So, like, you always look good, and Echo is kind of a win more hero in the sense of, like, if your team's playing well, you just, like, get more value, especially because of focusing beam. Like, if your team hits, if your Widow hits a headshot on the tank, then you just instantly beam them, free kill. So, whereas if they don't, maybe you just can't get that kill. But Rascal is definitely insanely good at the hero. He has a great sense of controlling space for his team, and he's really great at performing that role with limited resources. He kind of has to be off on his own to control those flanks, and he wins those duels more often than not. So that ends up being a real strength, I think, for the Shark, that Rascal can be this sort of solo player who's not getting as much resources, and that allows players like Ons or Striker to really like get the pocket, and perform really well. And then it's all sort of, I feel, orchestrated by players like Moth, who has just consistently been an insanely good caller, insanely good communicator. Was a major reason, in my opinion, that Team USA won last year. Like this, I think Moth, you can't really understate how valuable this player is. Like if you ever play with Moth in like a pug or whatnot, he's just insanely cool, calm, and collected. And not only has God tier mechanics on main support, but is like a true leader. Like he shows that you don't have to be limited on main support. You don't have to be a fragger, like a playmaker or a leader. He's actually both at the same time. And to do that and stay calm and collected and still have a good individual performance, like best in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, one thing's definitely for sure. This has easily been probably the best weekend of Overwatch we've seen all season long. And now we're going into a little bit of a break. So everyone gets a little bit of downtime for the next 2 weeks before we come back. I believe it'd be smart to stick to the tournament format. I think there wasn't a single person who didn't love it. And at least from what I saw, the viewership was at least doubled throughout the weekend. So looking forward to Overwatch League returning. But until then, players and coaches, enjoy your time off. Up next, we're going to do something a little bit different and have a different kind of fun here. We're going to test out Jake's knowledge of in-game lore that might be a little bit more on the obscure side. So stay tuned, because you'll get to play along as well.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Hey, it's Weird Beard from Checkpoint XP reminding you to make it blue. Help say thank you to our heroes on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic. Whether you're streaming, drawing, singing, cooking, or anything else, showcase your talents and hashtag light it blue. You can find more information at our website, checkpointxp.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Owl's Nest. We just got done talking about the results from this May Melee Tournament. And now we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to test out some of Jake's in-game lore knowledge. We know that he's a master when it comes to in-depth analysis. Let's just see how much further into the game that goes as well. So I like to call this game You Don't Know Jack Morrison, because, you know, copyright laws and whatnot. So Jake, this is going to be multiple choice. You can take as much time as you need to sort of work through some of these. But what we're going to do is, before I tell you whether or not you're right or wrong, we're going to go through all the questions so that those of you watching can, pause if you need to, grab a pencil and paper, take this test along with us, and let us know how you did. It might even work to see if we can't get this out on the internet there somewhere so that you can give it to your friends as well. So Jake, first question. What is the name of the diner on Route 66 where the attacking team spawns? Is it A, the Route 66 Dive, B, High Noon In-N-Out, C, the Panorama Diner, or D, Deadlock Diner?
This is tough. I don't know this. I'm going to go with D, Deadlock Diner, though.
All right. Question two. Which of the following are not part of D.Va's old mecha squad? A, Casino, B, King, C, Overlord, or D, D-Mom?
I'm going to go with D-Mom. Again, not 100% on this. These are definitely pretty obscure.
All right, number three. When a friendly Sigma uses his ultimate, he says, "What is that melody?" When an enemy Sigma uses his ultimate, he uses a different phrase in Dutch. What is the English translation of that phrase? A. What goes up must come down. B. The universe sings to me. C. Alley-oop. Or D. And they all fall down.
I'm going to go with B. The universe sings to me.
All right. Question four. Which of the following Talon members were not in Black Watch? A. Sombra. B. McCree. C. Reaper. Or D. None of the above.
A. Sombra.
All right. In a past Gamescom live panel, the Overwatch developers described this character as being emblematic of the optimism and energy of the Overwatch world. They were the response to Tracer's call of, "The world could always use more heroes." Which character is this referring to? A. Zenyatta, B. Winston, C. Lucio, or D. Mei?
I'm going to go with C. Lucio.
All right. Question number six. Torbjorn is a Scandinavian masculine given name that comes from the Old Norse... Okay, I actually don't know how to pronounce that. Torbjorn? Which translates to A. Builder God, B. Thunder Bear, C. Loyal Worker, or D. Firehand?
I wish it was A. Builder God, but I think it's D. Firehand.
All right, next question. Which of the following is not a true fact about Winston? A. Hollywood.
Wait, can I change my answer? Actually, it's got to be Thunder Bear.
All right, sure.
Change my answer to B, Thunder Bear.
Yeah, absolutely. So which of the following is not a true fact about Winston? A. Hollywood contacted him to be in a movie. B. He pays his taxes to the Swiss government. C. Zarya is the only person who has beaten him in an arm wrestling match. Or D. He designed Tracer's Chronal Accelerator.
I'm going to go with B. Swiss government.
All right. Just about done here. Next question. Jeff Kaplan once confirmed that Junkrat likes to keep this in his canteen. Is it A. Jack Daniel's whiskey? B. Milk tea with boba, half sweetened? C. Ginger beer? Or D. Just regular H2O?
Yeah, I'm going to go with whiskey. Sort of fitting.
All right, two more to go. Kritz Metzen has joked that Farrah has a little bit of what Marvel hero in her? A. The Hulk. B. Black Widow. C. Captain America. Or D. Spider-Man?
Oh, it's got to be Captain America, right?
All right, last question then. Zarya has a tattoo on her arm, 512. What does this number represent? Is it her weightlifting record? The number of lives she failed to save from Omnix? The number of Omnix she killed defending Russia? Or its meaning has yet to be revealed?
I thought it's her weightlifting record.
All right, so let's go ahead back here now and see which ones you got right and which ones you got wrong.
I didn't know confidently, so these are even more obscure than I was expecting.
Yep, so you said the name of that diner on Route 66 is the Deadlock Diner. Unfortunately, it is the Panorama Diner.
That makes sense.
Which of the following are not part of D.Va's old mecha squad? You said D-Mom. You are correct. Which friendly, when Sigma uses his ult, what does the Dutch translation stand for? You said the universe sings to me, and you were correct. Which of the following Talon members were not in Blackwatch? I actually realized while asking this question that I actually messed up on this. The intended answer was indeed supposed to be Sombra. But technically, McCree was never a member of Talon either, so I guess I could have given either one of those to you. And those of you at home,
true.
A and B both work. In a past Gamescom live panel, which Overwatch hero was sort of supposed to represent the world could always use more heroes? You said Lucio, and you were correct.
Okay, I'm feeling better now.
Torbjorn is a Scandinavian masculine name given that comes from the Old Norse Porbjorn. That's probably pronounced incorrectly, but you said that it means Thunder Bear. You are correct.
Ooh, the late change. Really, that's a bad idea, but I felt confident.
Which of the following facts were not true about Winston? You said that he pays his taxes to the Swiss government. The correct answer is that Zarya is the only person who has beaten him in an arm wrestling match. He does, in fact, pay taxes to the Swiss government. Huh. What is what does Junkrat keep in his canteen? You say that Jack Daniel's whiskey. It is actually, according to Jeff Kaplan, milk tea with boba half sweet.
All right, this one's just a troll, so how can I get this one right?
there is actually a in-game spray of him drinking a boba tea that has the same icon on it that May has her skin from. So.
All right, well, then it is fair. That's fair. Take the L.
Chris Metzen has joked that Farrah has a little bit of what Marvel hero in her. You said Captain America, and you were correct.
That one's easy, man. Farrah is such a Captain America type. You know, she's that holier than thou. Justice. Justice reigns from above.
And finally, what does the 512 tattoo on Zarya's arm stand for? It is indeed her weightlifting record. So looking back, you only got one, two... You only got three wrong. 3 out of 10. That's
Heck
not bad.
Yeah.
That is not bad.
Heck yeah. I'm pretty good at puzzling.
So I'm going to go ahead and make sure that we do have some place over on our website at checkpointxp.com for you guys to also take this or to give it to your friends for them to take it to see how well they know obscure Overwatch lore. Thank you, Jake, for joining me today, as always, guys. And even though the Overwatch League is going on hiatus for a few weeks, don't worry. We here at the Owl's Nest will still be bringing you some quality content over the next few weeks while we wait for the next tournament to come back to us. So until then, make sure you stay on that payload.